This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg in our Fargo studio. And in our Bismarck studio, we have Sue Balcom because it's time for Main Street Eats.
Sue, thank you for joining us.
I am happy to be here.
In July, we often see the hot temperatures. There can be a little bit of humidity, and then all of a sudden it's powdery mildew. There's just your plants look
It's depressing. It is. It's so depressing. And I didn't ever experience powdery mildew till I started growing cukes inside of a high tunnel, which, of course, is a little more enclosed than an open area garden. And I know that you can save your plants from powdery mildew, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. But if you see any white or gray powdery spots and your entire leaf on your plant is covered, sometimes even your fruit starts looking kind of crummy like that, your plants will die if you don't take action right away. So if you have high humidity and moderate temperatures, you need to be proactive if you want to save your cucumbers.
So what do you do?
Well, first of all, you do not want to fertilize too much. And you definitely want to thin your plants out so that they're not so crowded. One of the things that we do when we grow our cucumbers is we trellis them. We use a trellising system that is a spool of really heavy-duty thread, and it comes down, and you can clip your plants to it. That way, you get good air circulation. You actually get straighter cucumbers that way because they're being pulled down by the gravity as the plant is growing up, too. So that's a really good thing. But when you want to, you can treat your powdery mildew with some common things that you find around the house, like baking soda. And this is the one that my friend told me about, and she's an avid gardener. She uses a tablespoon of baking soda and some liquid soap, like Dawn detergent, in a gallon of water. And then she sprays this on the leaves of her plants before powdery mildew shows up, which in late July, it's probably about that time to start looking for those kinds of things. Spray the underside of the leaves also.
Well, let's talk about the things we grow that other animals like to eat, like birds and berries.
Oh, yeah. You know, one year I went out and looked at my gooseberries and I thought to myself, they are going to be ready to pick tomorrow morning. And sure enough, I walked out there in the dawn of time and had my bucket and my anticipation level was high. And every single one was gone. Every single berry was gone. And to this day, I do not know if it was the birds or the deer. So if your berries are starting to ripen, just the tiniest little glint of red is going to start attracting birds. Mm-hmm. And so you want to get a net on them. Now, if you're concerned about birds getting under the net and getting caught in there, which that happens often enough, I use Agribon, which is kind of a lightweight frost blanket, and I just kind of wrap around the whole of my plant, and every once in a while I go out there and grab one just to taste, just to keep an eye on them, because I don't want anything coming up from the bottom like a mouse. But that'll keep the deer away, too. You know, the deer will eat through netting. They'll do anything they can to get those stinking fruits. So you want to definitely start watching your berry bushes now.
They are excellent eaters, those deer.
I hate them.
Well, I'm wondering how much would the spring weather that we have, what impact does that have on berries?
You know, I am a little disappointed because I see my Nanking cherry bush blossoms must have froze off because I don't have a single berry on there. But I have a friend that grows berries for us for jam and like sand cherries and things like that. And he said that they're phenomenal. So the trick there, I don't think they mind the cool weather, but any kind of a frost that kills those blossoms off means you're not going to have fruit. Our apples look pretty good. My gooseberries are doing pretty good. I'm still like mourning the loss of those Nanking cherries because they're my favorite jelly. Oh, that's just such wonderful jelly. And my brother said the choke cherries are looking like they're going to have, we're going to have a good crop there too. So in spite of the weird weather we're experiencing, it looks like we might be okay. And of course, you do realize that there's a something called a microclimate.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when you're planting a garden out in your yard, you should spend some time at different times of the day mapping your microclimate. You know, like if you're standing over in a certain area and you feel nice breeze and you're cool, and then you walk to another area of your garden and it's warm there, you'll want to probably pick the warmer, sunnier spot with less wind to put in your garden. But every yard has microclimates.
Well, we've been talking a lot about fruits and vegetables. Let's talk about flowers. They brighten up the season.
I love this. This is going to date us all here. You know what a deadhead is, right?
Someone who goes to all the Grateful Dead concerts.
Yeah, there you go.
We've heard of them.
Or if you're a breadhead, you come to my farmer market booth and buy bread. We are breadheads there. But it's time to start deadheading all those flowers. And you maybe already are doing that. But you must take those dead flowers off, pinch them off right below their little neck there. And then that makes your plants look prettier. It also prevents seeds from spreading where you don't want seeds to spread. And then your blooms will continue to bloom. Because every plant, and this is a thing that happened this year. I had some early cucumbers out. And, you know, because you always like to try to be the first one to get something to grow. It's a big competition amongst gardeners. But if a plant, like these cucumbers, they like warm weather. And I put them out, and I'm like, it's warm. And then it got cold. And then I think it frosted a couple nights. And so what they do is, rather than put energy into growing plants, they put energy into growing seeds. And so they wanted to hurry up and bloom and produce cucumbers. And there's only like two or three little leaves on there. And it's just not working for me or the cucumbers.
Well, if you're planting certain kinds of plants that require pollination, let's talk about that, because we've had some issues with pollinators like bees, and we want to encourage this activity, that buzzing that makes the plants grow and flourish and all that.
Yeah, I've had a couple bees that I've seen in my yard, and I'm like, go get your friends.
Please, anything.
Anything is right.
You can move in. Do you need a bed?
Right. Well, you know, you can encourage them to come into your yard with those bee tubes.
Yes.
Which I think are super cool and awesome, but then I got that look from my husband, so I thought I'd wait till next year and try that.
I feel like the more often you get that look, Sue, the more often you're on the right track.
Yes, yay! I believe that, too. It's just that somebody told me that the timing has to be right. Like if he goes skiing for like a week in the winter, all the packages will be in the house before he gets back, kind of thing. And he listens to this program too, so I have to be careful about that, and I won't be able to order anything. Shoot. Well, anyway, so cucumbers require pollination because there are male and female flowers that come out on your cucumbers. And then pumpkins, squash, all that stuff has to be pollinated. So if you're growing inside of a high tunnel, you need to either grow varieties that don't require pollination. Don't ask me how that works because I have no idea. Or you have to make sure that you've got good air movement and that there's bees and birds around that can swoop through there and do some pollinating for you. But I have a friend that grows so many cucumbers that she goes out with an electric toothbrush and she brushes up against the flowers and then moves to the next one so that she's pollinating.
Wow.
She pollinates her own cucumbers. So talk about playing God.
I won't go any further with that thought that just went through my head there. All right. So how about organic growing? You know, you're into that, aren't you?
I totally am. I am very sensitive to artificial smells and chemicals. And I don't know why, but somebody said there's something in your DNA that makes some of us a little more sensitive to that kind of thing. So I try as much as I can to use what I have around the house. And so Epsom salt is one of my favoriteest things because I use it in my bath. And I also use it to, this morning, ward off slugs in my pea patch. But you can also use it to add magnesium and calcium to your tomatoes. It's a really wonderful supplement for your garden.
How do you use it?
Actually, with the tomatoes, you want to definitely mix up a tablespoon in a gallon of water and apply it in summer months. Now, you know tomatoes don't like their leaves to get wet. So when you're doing any kind of application, you want to do it around the ground level of your tomato plants. But a lot of times your blossom end rot is because of the inconsistent watering and or lack of magnesium and calcium in your soil. But roses also love Epsom salt, and that you can actually spread around the soil in your rose bushes, kind of mix it into the soil. You don't have to mix that with water first. And then I read just recently that slugs don't like climbing over salt, because if you've ever dumped salt on a slug, mm-hmm. it kind of doesn't like that very much, and they curl up. But they still last longer than anything I know. Like, my kids Pat used crunches. To pick them. Yeah, they're going to survive a nuclear attack. I just know it. And that's really too bad, because, you know, there's nothing worse than sticking your hand into your mulch and finding a slug.
Oh, thank you for that.
I hate those things. And that's another thing that you want to maybe check. If you have a lot of slugs, you don't want to apply maybe such deep mulch around your plants, because they really like that wet kind of, and it has been kind of wet, and it's getting wetter in North Dakota than it used to be too. So,
well, as we get late in summer, we also look for those tomatoes. So how do we get the big ones?
Oh my gosh, you go out there and sing to them, for crying out loud.
Any song in particular?
Anything.
Hang on, Little Tomato would be a good one.
I kind of make up words to songs, and then my husband's like, don't you know the words of that song? I'm like,
nope.
It's my song. I can sing whatever I want, you know. And but pruning tomatoes. Now, you'll have two train of thoughts here. You'll have the people that really prune, and then you'll have the people that are just like, oh, leave them alone. I don't want to hurt my tomatoes. But one of the first things, like if you're kind of a middle-of-the-road person, you always want to pick off that little runner that kind of comes between the main stem and the branch of the tomato. Now, I know somebody who actually prunes off everything but the blossom branches on a tomato. So he has basically a stick with a couple arms and all these great big red tomatoes hanging off of it. But it's so much fun. I love to prune tomatoes. I do. You come out of the tomato patch and you're just green and smell like a tomato.
I bet you smell wonderful.
Yes,
yeah.
You smell like a tomato. So prune those tomatoes. A couple reasons are to, like you said, encourage it to produce larger fruit. But, you know, it always helps keep the pests away. You know, voles and mice and things like that kind of live under those dense branches. And it's good to have a lot of air moving back and forth in there for the purpose of keeping diseases from spreading. And if you suspect that any of your tomatoes have diseases, or any other of your plants that you pull out of the garden, like cucumbers with powdery mildew, you do not want to throw those into your compost heap, because you're just spreading that disease around.
Yeah,
you want to add them to your burn pile.
And if you find slugs in your compost, you don't want to use that compost, I take it.
Well, unless you want to sit there and pick those things out, string them through with a needle and thread and hang them up for the birds.
I think can't you just do, like, take a little, like a something about the size of a tuna can and put beer in there?
That's
and
what I
they
hear.
Just, they're like poets on payday. They go right to the beer.
Right to the beer. That's what I hear. But we don't have any beer in our house. Maybe I need to get stop and pick up some on the way home.
I may have a little slug in me. Well, we check in with Root Cellar Sue every week for Main Street Eats. Always a pleasure, Sue.
Oh, I just love it, and I love to talk about food.
What's happening is next.